is Willie Harris versus Zeddy Cox.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Linda Coberly and I represent Willie Harris. Mr. Harris is currently serving a 40-year sentence for murder in Indiana. Mr. Harris seeks relief from his conviction because the jury considered his case without a critical piece of evidence. And that evidence is a toxicology report that would have shown that the decedent, Mr. Jones, was drunk and high on cocaine when he was shot.
That report is to say he richly deserved to die.
Not so. That is not our point, Your Honor.
I thought that was always a defense to a murder case, to show that the decedent richly deserved what happened to him.
The defense in this case, Your Honor, was self-defense. And the defense was
which is to show that the defendant Richard Deceit richly deserved what happened to him.
The defense was to show that over the course of the evening, Mr. Jones was the aggressor. Mr. Jones accosted my client and his wife.
Well, there was no question about that in the evidence, was there?
The evidence on that came in through testimony.
Yes,
in through the testimony of my client and his wife. And his wife, who, by the way, was impeached because of a previous inconsistent statement about a gun. So the evidence that the jury heard was testimony evidence. Testimony evidence by the defendant himself.
All the evidence that went in for the defense was that the decedent was the aggressor on several occasions.
The evidence did show that the decedent
was the aggressor. There was no rebuttal evidence to that.
There wasn't, but again, the evidence was presented in the form of testimony by the defendant himself. And
so what the missing document, the toxicology report, would have demonstrated was why he was aggressive, or that he was just a real bum all the way around, or what?
The evidence would have demonstrated that the decedent had a .19 alcohol level.
Oh,
he was high as a kite.
Yeah,
he was
also wonder he's able to be aggressive. I mean, he's stiff enough so he was almost passive. But I was curious as to know what that would add to the picture, the fact that we know he's a bum, he acted like a bum, and so that he was also drunk as a bum. What was that going to add to the whole thing?
It changes the character of the confrontation. It changes the character of the evidence in the jury's mind. According to the Court of Appeals, which, by the way, was divided, as you know, on this issue, even according to the majority opinion, the character of Jones's behavior during the course of the evening was a critical piece of Mr. Harris's defense. And with this evidence, the jury may have credited Jones's claim, Harris's claim, that Mr. Jones was behaving in a hostile and erratic manner. It's one thing to say that two rational people having an argument culminates in someone getting shot. The actual picture here is that Mr. Jones left a bar, accosted my client, and was under the influence of both alcohol and cocaine.
As an abstract question, does everybody in the area carry a gun? Apparently everybody that went out that evening was armed to the teeth. I mean,
well, Mr. Jones certainly had a gun with live rounds in his pocket, and obviously Harris had a gun as well.
Yeah. Is there anybody around that was not armed? I mean,
it does appear to be.
Wild night in town. What town is this?
Your Honor, the record doesn't make clear, but it appears to be in the area of Gary. It seems that it was an urban area.
Not Indianapolis.
No. The Indianapolis was murdered. This is all gunfighting.
On that gun point, the gun was in the decedent's pocket.
Correct.
Not displayed.
Correct.
Was it evidence that Harris knew he had a gun? Was that gun displayed in the earlier?
The record doesn't reveal much about the history between these two gentlemen. In fact, there's reason to believe that they did know each other because, again, the whole reason for Mr. Harris's presence in this area was to help a woman named Effie Johnson move out of a home that she shared.
Well, they were all in the same house.
And they were all in the same house for some period of time. We don't know if Mr. Harris knew he had a gun, but Mr. Harris did testify that he believed that Jones was pulling a gun. There was conflicting evidence on that point, and obviously the gun was ended up being found in Mr. Jones's pocket after he died, so clearly he hadn't pulled it all the way out.
As I understand preliminarily, which it was Jones, didn't he go to make a phone call? Who?
Mr. Harris, my client.
Couldn't find where his friend was living.
Correct.
He was living with Jones.
Correct.
Made a phone call, and apparently Jones was at the place where he made the phone call. Isn't that where the first time?
He was in a bar, and he came out.
Known.
Yes. It does appear that they knew each other. They had some connection. We don't know if Mr. Harris knew that Jones tended to carry a gun.
He knew he probably was there to retrieve his friend from the house.
It appears so, yes. Yes. And so you can imagine that perhaps this was not the most harmonious situation to begin with.
How would the lawyer have got the toxicology report?
The lawyer could have done one of two things.
I know, the government, put a Brady issue aside, say that the lawyer was being more diligent, could have got it. What would it?
He could have done one of two things. He testified at the state evidentiary hearing on collateral review that he knew how to request toxicology reports from the state coroner's office. He also could have sought a continuance until the report was available. He could have done either of those things, and he testified that he knew how to do both of those things.
When he gets the report, what does he do with it?
He uses it in the trial. He presents it with expert testimony to help explain to the jurors what it means. The jurors would hear what a 0.19 alcohol level really is. They would hear the effect that alcohol and cocaine might have on a person when they're in combination. And remember, the evidence presented to the jury was actually that there was no medical evidence of intoxication. Because there was no toxicology report, the pathologist was able to testify that there was no evidence during the autopsy that Jones was drunk. That colored, unquestionably, the jury's consideration of the evidence. The jury did not hear that Jones was behaving under the influence of liquid courage, as it were. Mr. Harris knew that Jones came out of the bar. It was reasonable for him to assume, if he didn't know, that Jones was drinking. Mr. Jones was behaving erratically. He was behaving in a hostile manner. And the only thing the jury had to go on for that was the testimony of the defendant himself. It's undeniable that having independent medical evidence to support that testimony would have affected the jury. It would have caused the jury to, as the Court of Appeals majority opinion acknowledged, it would have caused the jury to credit Mr. Jones' testimony. Now, surely the standard for prejudice under Strickland, which is rigorous, is met when, but for counsel's error, the jury may have credited the defendant's own account of the facts on an issue that was undoubtedly critical to his defense. And remember, there were two defenses here, self-defense and sudden heat. Sudden heat is not about a gun. In order to get a manslaughter conviction instead of a murder conviction, the defendant doesn't have to show that a gun was pulled. He simply has to show that the conduct of the decedent was such that he was provoked to act out of sudden heat.
Were there any lesser-included defensive instructions given to the jury?
Yes, Your Honor. The jury was instructed on a sudden heat defense.
The jury had instructions on that, but your argument is it didn't have the evidence.
Correct.
Or didn't hear what would have been helpful evidence to establish along with lesser-included.
Correct. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Fine, thank you.
Before you sit down,
ordinarily
a judge only gives a lesser included offense instruction if there is evidence to support it. What was the evidence that supported it here? It had to be something.
Mr. Harris did testify that he was provoked, that he was Mr. Jones was the aggressor, that he was behaving in a hostile manner. That evidence did come in testimony. Now, we don't know whether the jury credited it. And there's certainly reason to believe that they would have given it more credit had they had this independent evidence to back it up. The effect of independent medical test evidence to bolster a defendant's testimony is undeniable. So there was evidence that this was a sudden, that this wasn't premeditated and so on. And that's why, when that became an issue in the trial, that's why the instruction was given, is my understanding.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Martin?
May it please the court, this court should affirm the district court because it correctly concluded that the Indiana Court of Appeals reasonably applied Strickland in determining that Mr. Harris's counsel had not rendered ineffective assistance. The court's determination in this regard basically refuted the Brady allegation as well, although there is not evidence, and in fact, the evidence that was adduced at the post-conviction proceedings indicated that there was not a suppression of the toxicology reports. They were available through due diligence.
Let's say that Brady aside here. I have a hard time understanding why this evidence wouldn't have been really helpful to the defendant to be able to paint the victim in as bad a light as possible, and that certainly would have. Expert testimony on how someone reacts with the 0.19 blood alcohol.
Your Honor, with respect to your reference to the expert testimony, I think that that's very telling in addressing this claim. The expert that testified at the post-conviction hearing testified that what he could discern from the toxicology reports would indicate that the petitioner would have acted or would have had an altered mood, but that he couldn't predict how
the petitioner would have deceived.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, that's correct. Mr. Jones.
Well, as I can tell from this record, the petitioner was cold sober, but I mean, I'm willing to concede he was a hot-headed fellow. But what I want to know is, what did the expert testimony say that the impact of the toxicology report would have had on his belief of how the decedent would have acted?
Well, that's what's so telling, Your Honor. He says that he could not predict how the decedent would have acted.
I know he can't predict. Did he have an idea of what it generally does to people who...
The general observations were that there would have been a swaying, I think slowed responses, problems with balance, and I will also add that he did say that cocaine could create jerky movements and an appearance of hyperactivity.
A threatening attitude, in fact?
A threatening attitude. I don't think that was in the testimony, Your Honor, although one might reasonably infer that that was the case. But that is the reason why this evidence would not have been particularly helpful.
Why?
There was testimony that the decedent had been hostile, confrontational, and counsel keeps...
But that's only from the defendants who testified as to those things.
No, Your Honor.
Who else testified about the hostility?
The defendant's wife also testified about the hostility.
The defendant's witnesses. They say, was there any evidence other than the defense witnesses that the decedent was acting in a hostile manner?
I believe, Your Honor, and I do not remember the specific testimony that Essie Johnson, who was the individual who Mr. Harris and his wife went to pick up,
right,
testified about the confrontational hostile behavior that occurred in Johnson's home. Now, of course, she wasn't privy to what happened outside the bar when they saw the telephone initially. But what occurred in the house was just continuation of what was occurring at that point. And my point to the court is that the jury was already presented with objective observations of Mr. Jones's behavior, not only from the defendant and his wife, but also from Essie Johnson. And the point being, now one thing that is alleged by Mr. Harris is that essentially because Mr. Harris's wife's testimony had been impeached by a prior statement she gave to police officers, that this, my understanding of the argument is that this essentially just cancels out her testimony, leaving Mr. Harris's version of the events on an equal playing field for a competition for credibility with Mrs. Johnson's or Essie Johnson's
about
testimony.
The gun.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
She impeached about the gun with that.
She had told a police officer after the incident that she had not seen a gun and did not know that Mr. Jones, the victim, had one until after he was dead. We weren't left here with an equally competing inconsistent testimony from the defendant and Effie Johnson's account. Rather, the jury had a very strong reason to infer that Mr. Harris was lying about what happened with respect to the gun, and that his wife was lying to corroborate that. So,
there was testimony in the case in chief from the autopsy report, not the toxicology, the autopsy report, that the defendant was not under the influence of liquor or drugs.
I don't believe that testimony is in the record, Your Honor. I believe what the testimony was that when the...
I understand he was affirmatively asked, was there any evidence of liquor? And he said no.
No, my understanding is that he said that there was no odor of alcohol when he performed the autopsy.
No indication of alcohol.
No odor.
That's the only thing?
Yes.
He didn't say positively that there was no indication he had of intoxication.
I can't tell you that definitively, Your Honor. But this evidence did not have the capacity to render a reasonably probable result of a different outcome in this case, given the record and the evidence that was presented to the jury. And in fact, had counsel decided to present this evidence, he would have been running a risk, and that is that the jury would infer that the victim was incapacitated to an extent that he was not able to defend himself and was not very threatening at any rate. Moreover, the physical evidence also corroborated reinforced the inference that Mr. Harris was lying about what transpired with respect to the gun, because the victim was found with the gun still in his pocket under his coat. And finally, I would just point out that had the defense counsel decided to present this evidence, there was a risk of it provoking a damaging inference from the jury, and by leaving it out, he did not sacrifice presenting significant persuasive evidence to the jury, Your Honor. And because of this, the district court correctly found that the Indiana Court of Appeals adjudicated this claim in a constitutional manner. If there are no further questions from the court, I will yield.
Give a couple of minutes. Okay, fine. You got about a minute. We'll let you finish up whatever you need here.
What about Mr. Martin's statement that if that evidence would have been in, the jury would have looked at it and said, well, he killed a defenseless drunk or something like that?
Well, there's no evidence that he was acting like a defenseless drunk. There's evidence that he was acting like a belligerent, irrational person. And it's just a question of whether the jury credited that evidence. In fact, if you'll remember, the State Court of Appeals on direct appeal characterized this whole thing as a minor scuffle. I think that with the evidence that the decedent was acting under the influence of a great deal of alcohol and cocaine, this would not have looked like a minor scuffle at all. It would have looked like a much more involved altercation. And there's no reason to think, other than the amount of alcohol, there's no reason to think that the jury would have concluded that he was incapacitated. He didn't behave in an incapacitated fashion. Remember, the decedent grabbed jumper cables out of my client's hand as this confrontation escalated. He was holding jumper cables in his left hand and wouldn't give them back. And that's what began the real physical confrontation at the end of this evening. He had his gun in his right-hand pocket, and all he would have had to do is move his coat aside in order to give my client reason to believe he was pulling the gun. I wanted to address briefly the gun evidence. The gun evidence was not unequivocal. counsel suggested that my client was lying about the gun. Well, there's no reason to think he was lying about the gun. His testimony could have been harmonized with the evidence that the gun was found in his pocket, and the jury might have made a bigger effort to harmonize that testimony if it had been presented with independent evidence that corroborated other aspects of my defense, of my client's testimony. This is a very close case for self-defense. My client was not the aggressor. He tried to get away. He tried to remove himself from the situation, and the decedent followed him. This was a very close case for manslaughter. And there was additional evidence that the state failed to disclose and that defense counsel failed to obtain that would have given independent corroboration to a critical point to my client's defense. In light of these facts, can we really say that there is no reasonable probability that the evidence would have caused the outcome of this case to be different? I don't think that it is possible to say that. I think it's quite clear that the evidence would have reasonably probably changed the outcome of this case. Thank you.
Would have reasonably probably. I like that. I like
that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement. And I understand you were court appointed as well, right? Yes. Thanks for your advocacy for your client.